We're talking now with Jane Souter, and she is the Republican candidate in House Seat 8, District 1 for the Idaho Legislature. Jane, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Well, I always like to start out by asking candidates, give us your story. Tell us a bit about your background, and then I want to segue into why you're running. But give us the story of your life, if you will.
Okay, well, I was born in Minnesota, and I went to K through 11 in the public school system there in southern Minnesota. My dad worked at Hormel, and he was also a home builder, and my mom worked in the health industry. And so I have three brothers, and we were raised there in the country in Minnesota, and we went to public school, but then when I became a junior in high school, my brother had graduated, so I went ahead and enrolled in a private school for my senior year, and my mom was working at that school at the time, so I went there, and then I traveled the United States for my gap year, so to speak, and then I enrolled in a Bible college in Texas, and that is where I met my husband. And I graduated there. It was a two-year program, and I had an associate's in theology. So after that, married my husband. His name is Steve, and we've been married this year for 40 years. We have 9 children and 21 grandchildren.
That's a lot of grandchildren.
I like to include the 8 in-law children too, because they're part of the whole equation now. So yeah, there's 40 of us now, but it's kind of a crowd. But yeah, so we raised those children. We had 3 of them in Minnesota. Then we moved to Montana and had the rest of them, and lived in Libby and Troy for 13 years. And then my husband got a job working for the Christian Broadcasting Network. So we were, I was kind of single parenting a lot during the week. And so we decided that rather than homeschool, we would enroll them in a private Christian school in Moscow. So we moved to Moscow, Idaho, and 8 of the kids went to that school. And so then he then wasn't working anymore for that company, so then we were self-employed and had several small internet businesses, and were able, he was just able to provide a good living, and I didn't have to work outside the home. I was tempted to, but I, you know, it was always what was best for the kids, and that was to be at home with them, and so that's what I chose. It just really wasn't about me. It was just really about, you know, giving them a solid home life. And so I stayed home, and I did work, though, the last couple of years. I've worked at Schweitzer, and I've also worked at the Burnclow Bistro from 22 to 25. But I wasn't I don't have a very long resume, and I don't have a, quote, career. But anyway, so that brings us to 2025. I went ahead and I stopped working at the Burnclow because I wanted to focus on my campaign. And so that's kind of what I've done with my life. And I've helped my husband. We have small businesses. And so he's retired now, but at the time we had several businesses all the way back in Minnesota. We were landlords. And so we kind of just, we owned a 5-unit apartment complex. We lived in it with our renters, and we were in the attic. And it was a house that was built back in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, on the main drag, and it was built in 1903. So when we bought that, when we were newlyweds, we didn't want to kick out any renters, so we went ahead and we renovated the attic. And it was 16 feet high, so we were able to make this really cool apartment. Well, then a few years later, we sold it, and then we couldn't afford the rent of our own apartment because it was such a beautiful apartment. So we were like, well, we better move. So we moved to the Northwest. Mm. So that's kind of where I came from and how I landed in Idaho.
Are there any nonprofit groups you're involved with you'd like to mention here in town or nationally even?
Well, just ministries that we've worked with over the years, the Christian Broadcasting Network, the Tim Tebow Foundation. We have a ministry in Ecuador that we love and that we've actually participated in missions work in the Andes Mountains, taking shoes and socks to kids in the mountains. doing clinics, taking nurses and doctors, and actually providing the shoes for the kids. And that's called One Heart Global Ministries. And we've been, we've just really enjoyed working with them. And our kids have also done ministry.
So, so you've traveled to Ecuador?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Habla español.
Poquito.
So, okay. Well, the perennial question for any candidate, why are you running for legislature?
Well, I did run last time, 2 years ago, and at that time, my reasoning was the same. I wanted the citizens here in District 1 to have really good Republican representation. I felt that they needed that, that they deserved that, and so I basically am running again in 2026 to unseat the incumbent, and that's my goal. He clearly is, you know, voting with the Democrats a good percentage of the time, and in 2025 he was voting with the Democrats 83% of the time. In 2026, now that the session's over, it was clearly documented that he voted with the Democrats 74% of the time. So I feel that because I'm a candidate who will follow the Republican platform, that I would be a viable candidate.
Well, I can't do any fact-checking on your numbers of times he's voted with the Democrats, but is that the percentage of all votes cast?
No, that is minus the unanimous votes. So anything unanimous is taken out of that equation.
Okay. Well, what are the biggest issues for you that are motivating you to run?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues facing Idaho, not just specifically North Idaho, but all of Idaho, is the overarching problem of illegal immigration. And I think that does really touch on a lot of the areas that affect us, how our tax dollars are spent. I really am I'm supportive of taking away the things in the welfare program, all of the different medical and food and all those things that attract the illegals to our area. I'm really in favor of ending those things and eliminating them so that the illegals would want to go back home. So that's pretty much where I stand with that. I feel like we need to be using those resources for our veterans and for the people that are needy here, and not just dishing all of that out to people who are here illegally. I don't have a problem with them coming here. I just want them to come in legally.
Mm-hmm. Do you have numbers? How many illegal aliens do we have in this area? Is there an estimate for that?
You know, the estimate in, I don't know about this area, but the estimate in Idaho is upwards of 40,000. So, but they are costing us a lot in our resources. And I think that if we were able to shift those resources to our own citizens, I think that would make a huge difference in our economy. So obviously the problem lies in the people who are employing them. And that is where I see the discrepancy in, even in our legislature. They couldn't even pass anything that had teeth in it to remedy the problem. So I think that if we don't go to the source, and I do believe...
Which would be employers.
Which would be the employers, yes. And just doing the E-Verify. I mean, other states do that. Just doing E-Verify, making sure that somebody that you're going to employ is actually a citizen, or if they're not a citizen, that they're here legally and not just slipping in under the radar and then... never leaving, or, you know, bringing their family with them, or it's just a problem that's gone on for decades. And so we've got to, at some point, choose state sovereignty over just allowing anybody and everybody to come in.
Do you know what sorts of government programs that these illegal immigrants are taking advantage of? What sorts of programs would those be?
Well, I don't know all the program names, but I know that they get they're getting subsidized for food and for housing, for medical services, and even when everything is taken away, there's still emergency medical. so that, you know, obviously we're not going to let somebody lay there and, you know, die on the side of the street. We're Americans, we're going to help people. But at the same time, we have to draw our line in the sand and say, okay, you know, we don't want to attract you here. We're not a magnet. And we are also, we can't sustain that kind of, that level of service to people who need our resources. So we're supposed to be sustaining our own citizens, and that's even difficult to do. So I think that part of the whole equation is to start there, also to make it less attractive for them to be coming here. And now they're not coming here. Obviously, the border has been closed, but at the same time, we need to deal with the ones that are still here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other issues that you would, or, you know, and do you feel are important for the local constituents to be paying attention to?
Well, I think that tax relief is a big thing. A lot of people talking about, well, first of all, I'm in favor of a repeal of the grocery tax. That didn't get dealt with appropriately in the 2026 session. There's also, of course, a lot of interest in eliminating property tax, but I have said that I don't think it's an overnight. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. It might be, you know, incremental. Or what I'd really like to see happen is where there's somehow a part of it that can be done for people that are over 65, people that are on fixed incomes, that their tax bills are just so big that it's just taking so much of their fixed income. So ideally, it would be eliminated altogether. And that won't happen unless there's a cut in spending. If there's no spending cuts in anything, then it's not going to work. But I think that rather than keeping on adding to the budget, we need to cut it back. And I know nobody likes, everybody like gets all panicky when you say, you know, spending cuts. But I think that if we can somehow roll it back and go back to even our budget from 5 or 6 years ago, and try to get those levels down and not keep creating taxing districts and creating programs, but cutting back the ones that really A, don't matter, or B, were funded by programs that were grant money or money that was only temporary. And then when the money's gone, they still keep the program. Well, if the money's gone, then they need to eliminate the program. So those are tough decisions, but somebody has to make them. So I think that in the legislature,
have you identified any of those programs that you would say, oh, if we have budget squeeze, these need to go?
I have. I don't have that list with me. I do have an actual pretty long list, because there's things that, for instance, they brought it forward, the Idaho DOGE committee brought forward the recommendation of getting rid of the Hispanic services. I can't remember the exact title, Hispanic Department of Services or something like that. And it was about $540,000, and it didn't pass through the legislature. So it was a recommendation. That's what DOGE was there to do. They made the recommendation and it didn't pass. So DOGE can only do so much. They can dig around and find things that are unnecessary, but unless the legislature is willing to make the hard decision, it's not going anywhere.
Well, that actually segues right into a question I had concerning some of the legislation that came up in this 2026 session. Mm-hmm. And the budget and spending was very much on the minds of the legislators. It was somewhat of a contentious session as they wrangled over ways to cut the budget back because state revenues have been declining. Mm-hmm. And in this session, the legislature and Governor Brad Little enacted a series of bills for budget cuts that are going to reduce funding for most state agencies by about 4% this year and 5% beginning in the next fiscal year of 2027, which actually starts in July. Now, there's a whole bunch of bills that enacted these cuts, and we can't go through each one, but one bill that affected the budgets of many of the agencies was House Bill 559, and that has Idaho conforming retroactively to the federal tax changes from the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that President Trump signed into law this last summer. And I guess my question would be, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that bill, but how would you have voted yay or nay for that one?
I think I would have voted yay for the cuts. It's not, like I say, it's not easy to do, but you have to roll it back. And I know there are services that will be cut, but I think in the long run, we just have to roll them back. It's kind of like your own personal finances. We know with our own personal finances that if we don't stay within our means, we're going to go into debt. Well, how many times has the federal government not stayed within their means and gone into debt to the point where it's like bricks on top of our children and our grandchildren? Will they ever come out from underneath that pile of bricks? I don't know, because that $39+ trillion is a lot of debt to pass off to our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah, and that is the federal government. Idaho has a constitutional mandate to have a balanced budget each year. So that's one of the reasons they had to enact these budget cuts, is to make sure that the budget would balance, at least on paper. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so you probably would have been in favor of House Bill 559. Let's talk about some other bills that the legislature considered this year. And these are bills that actually were passed by the legislature. Mm-hmm. One was House Bill 913, which calls for the state to implement work requirements for adults who are enrolled in the Medicaid expansion program here in Idaho in order for them to receive benefits. Is that one you would have supported?
I would. I believe that basically it's no free lunch. We should be taking people and making sure that if they can work, they should work. There shouldn't be just a blanket over that where everybody who applies just gets it without any kind of requirements. Dependency on the government is deleterious to a human being. People need to work. It gives them dignity, it gives them self-worth. And if they're not working and they're just collecting, then that means somebody else is paying for everything that has to do with them. So that's not fair either, to put everything onto the back of the taxpayer. So yes, I believe in work requirements. I just believe that there should be caps on things. There shouldn't be it shouldn't just be a free-for-all. So that's basically where I stand.
Okay, I don't have more details on that particular bill. So let's talk about another one, and this one actually settled a little closer to home. It was House Bill 561, and it called for a $2,000 per day fine for government entities that fly unapproved flags on government property. Now, this was going to affect Bonner's Ferry, because Bonner's Ferry has been flying a Canadian flag for decades, mm-hmm. being the closest city to the Canadian border. The only city in Idaho that really is that close to an international border. And the House bill is actually amended to allow flying the flags of other countries that have historic relations, which does allow Bonner's Ferry to fly the Canadian flag. So that part got smoothed over by the legislature. But other cities or government entities will be impacted. For instance, Boise has been flying a LGBTQ pride flag, and they will be no longer able, I think even starting right now, they had to take the flag down. I guess the question that it raises is, shouldn't that be a local control issue? Shouldn't local municipalities get to vote on what they want to do with things like flying a flag?
Yes, but I don't know about the case of Boise. If we take a government building and we say, okay, this government building can only have the American flag and the Idaho flag. Well, we're a sovereign nation. Idaho is a state. We have the people in Boise. If they were going to vote and say, you know, yeah, we want a pride flag on our government building. Well, that didn't happen. There could be a building right next to it that's not a government building. Fly your pride flag all you want right next door. But if we don't have some sort of standard, then there'd be no standard at all. So I'm a supporter of that bill. I think that it's fine to say that a government building can only have the United States and the state flag. And, you know, like I said, it's the pride flag or actually the Canadian flag. I mean, I know they made I don't know if they amended it or exactly what they did with the one up in Bonner's Ferry, but they had an exclusion or something. But anyway, I guess I'm just for it being just United States and state.
Okay. Okay, well, let's talk about another bill here. So House Bill 583 also passed, and it restricts local government's ability to impose rules that single out short-term rentals for additional requirements. So this bill actually impacts Sandpoint pretty directly. Mm-hmm. It was brought by some of the associations that promote vacation rental properties. Mm-hmm. And Sandpoint had imposed a limit on the number of homes in the city limits that could be used for short-term rentals, like Airbnbs.
Right.
Part of that motivation for the city was because they wanted to retain housing for the local workforce. And if it's more lucrative for everybody to be doing short-term rentals, end up being used for short-term rentals, often going vacant for a lot of the time, while housing gets even more expensive for the local workforce. Well, the state did approve this bill, which means the limit can't be imposed by a local entity, a local governmental entity. So I guess the question on House Bill 583 is, again, kind of a local control question. Mm-hmm. Would you have favored or opposed that bill?
Well, I would have favored it. And I'll tell you that in the entire state, we'll just call it Airbnb, even though it isn't all Airbnb, but just short-term rentals.
Yeah, some VRBOs.
Right. The amount of those Airbnbs is only 1% of all the homes in the state. So it's 1%. Of that 1%, 83% of those are just singular Airbnbs owned by a singular person. In other words, it's not a big corporation buying up housing. So over time, they've studied, does putting a cap on it actually make a difference in the housing prices? And it doesn't. So I'm in favor I think local control is good on some things, but I think this had to be addressed because it was actually inhibiting people's property rights. If a person wants to buy a house and rent it out, that should be their right to do that. Now, people have historically had problems with their neighbors. One neighbor owns his house, the next one owns his house, and somebody might be noisy, or somebody might have a dog, or in my case, I have a rooster. So I'm saying I'm not, you know, people generate noise. People generate, you know, maybe some things that they do that irritate the person next door. But overall, I think that this is an issue that just had to be addressed by the state. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know what? We're already running out of time. Unbelievable. So I'm going to ask just one more, and then I'm going to give you a chance to wrap up however you might like to. So there was another bill that actually had a local impact. It actually kind of arose from a case here in Sandpoint. That's House Bill 752. It was passed by the legislature. It makes a crime for people who knowingly and willfully enter a bathroom, locker room, shower room, changing room that is designed for the opposite biological sex. And we had a case in Sandpoint where a transgender person was using a restroom that some of the other the women using that restroom felt was inappropriate. So this actually will make it now illegal for a transgender person to use a restroom that may not accord with their gender at birth. And how would you have voted on that one?
I was all for that one because I really feel that the safety of women and girls in their spaces is so important. And I personally, I had four daughters, so I would not want them to go into a locker room at the YMCA and have a man be in the shower. That would just be, it's happening. I can't believe we're having these conversations, but we are. And, you know, we, again, it's too bad the government always has to step in and do these things and put these limitations on people, but it's because of these crazy things that are happening that you have to step in for the safety of people. And that is part of the role of government, is to make sure that people are safe. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Well, Jane Souter, candidate for House Seat A. We're getting out of time. Anything you'd like to say to wrap up to folks that are listening and deciding how they're going to vote?
Yes. Well, thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. I always like coming here. It's just a really comfortable place to come and to share my thoughts. I just forgot to say that I am not related to the incumbent.
Mark Souter.
I didn't say that, did I?
You didn't say that earlier, but that's something for voters to note that Jane Souter and Mark Souter are not related.
Yes.
They're both running for the same seat.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So my husband's name is Steve. Yes. And I'm not related to Mark. But anyway, I'm a firm believer in passing the baton. So I plan to, you know, if I'm elected by the good people of District 1, I plan to do this for maybe 2 to 4, maximum 6 years, so I can enjoy my husband's retirement as well. And if someone qualified comes along, I for sure want to pass that baton. I love it living in Idaho, and I would love to represent you. We are having we're having an event on May 1st. There's a fashion show downtown at Grace and Joy. And if anybody wants tickets for that, you can go to janesouter.com. And that's my website. You can go there and find out more about me and my family and where I stand on the issues. And just vote Jane. And I'm the right Souter. Thank you.
Jane Souter, thank you for coming in.